Hey, Laser Graves listeners, this is EK here. You know, when I was a kid growing up in the 80s, there was a set of books called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that terrified all of us on the playground. And the artwork in it was horrifying, but it made a huge impact on my life. So, flash forward, and a documentary was being created on these books, not only tracing the stories and the artwork, but also the controversy around them. You know, they became a number one banned book in America and pulled off the shelves in libraries. Well, this documentary traces that whole story, which is pretty fascinating, with amazing interviews with the family and friends and authors like R.L. Stine. And I was lucky enough to be involved in that documentary. I did all of the music. I composed the entire original soundtrack to that. And this documentary is now, as of today, available. You can find it on video on demand, but also online stores like Target and Best Buy. Or if you have a Walmart or something, you can just walk right into the store and pull it off the shelf and buy it. And I would appreciate if you would check it out, because it was a labor of love for several years by director Cody Merrick. He kind of single-handedly captured this, and I came on board, and it was a small crew, but we worked really hard on it, and we're very proud of it, and I would love for you to check it out and show your support, because if you are a fan of all things horror, especially children's horror of the 80s and 90s, it does not get any better than Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So run over to your local store and pick up a copy of this awesome documentary and enjoy it with your friends. Okay, bye. Laser Graves. I'm your co-host, TK Wimmer.
Hi. Are you feeling refreshed after doing all those cherry pickers?
No.
Oh. I'm Mariah. I'm also a co-host. I don't do cherry pickers.
Nope. We just talk about people doing cherry pickers.
You know,
which,
it.
For the record, nobody was doing cherry pickers.
Except for you.
In your mind.
Okay.
So you're listening to Laser Graves. This is a podcast about 80s stuff, mainly movies. We do other stuff from time to time. And tonight we are covering another movie. It is 1988's Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
Uh-huh.
Which will be interesting to talk about.
Yes, it will be. And question, did you think Oak Ridge Boys the entire time?
Why would I think Oak Ridge Boys?
Because they have that song, Elvira.
Oh, I would never have known the name Oak Ridge Boys.
Why do I know that?
Because of your father and his boring music.
Are they the ones that do that?
I don't. You're asking the wrong. You're totally asking the wrong person. Okay. Well, before we get into that, do you have any thrift store finds?
No, because today was a big old dud. We tried to go to the flea market together.
Oh, yeah.
And there was this weird freak windstorm, and apparently New Mexico can't hang. Having lived in one of the windiest places in the country prior to this, we went and there was like a slightly
gentle breeze.
Slightly more than a gentle breeze. Yes. And everybody's like, nope, we're done here. And they weren't going to flea market. And I had all these visions like of stuff I was going to get to do a junk situation in our backyard. Our friend Ty has a really awesome backyard with like junk finds.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's what I need. That's what's going to happen. And I envisioned myself making a fence out of doors, like repurposed doors from, you know, old barns and weird mid-century houses. And instead, that didn't happen. But you thrifted, and I went and instead walked a goat on a leash.
Well, you know, what's funny is we normally will thrift on the weekends, but sometimes, maybe once a month or every other month, we'll try and hit the flea market up that's downtown. Mm-hmm. But it's quite a trip for us. It's like an hour to get down there. So I was really disappointed because when we went up, I'm like, man, the parking lot is empty. This is awesome. Like front row parking. And then everything had tarps or wasn't even set up. And mm-hmm. I asked the guy, because you have to pay like a buck to get in. And we were really torn about it. In front of him, we were having this like existential crisis about if we should or should not pay a dollar each to get in. And we decided not to. And then the compromise was they have an indoor flea market right across the street. And I'm like, well, let's just do that instead. And it wasn't open yet. So the whole trip was a bust.
I think that's permanently closed because they have a fence around it.
No, that's just how they block off their parking lot. They just open at 10.
Jeez.
So... Calm down. And then I ended up going to a different town to go see my sister because my mother was in town visiting my sister about an hour away, and I drove over there to see them. And there is this killer thrift store that we discovered last time we were there.
Was there new stuff?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
It is the largest collection of VHS I can find, and I once again found a bunch of cool stuff. And then she said, the lady at the front was like, oh yeah, there's boxes back there, VHS. We'll get to them at some point. I said, well, is it cool if I just look through them? And she said, no, you can't do that. I'm like, aww. Damn it. Because you know there's some cool stuff. Because both times I've gone there now, I have found like, not just kind of like, oh, that's cool, but really good finds. Mm-hmm. But I'll save that for next episode because I already had a couple from a couple days ago, the last time we went out. Because I had gone downtown, found nothing. And then one store I went into for like 30 cents piece, I found a copy of Hell Knight from, I think it's 82. It's got Linda Blair in it. So that'll be a fun one to cover. I've been wanting to cover it, but we didn't own it. And then another classic kind of 80s slasher, Dress to Kill. I think it's 80s. It might be late 70s now that I'm thinking about it. But I found both of those for, you know, a few cents each. That was cool. So
that's all right.
Yeah. But yeah, that flea market was a bust.
Yes, and while you were doing that, I mentioned, I feel like I should elaborate that I was walking a goat on a leash.
Oh, please. Yeah, do.
Because this is the
platform to talk about it.
Well, I said it, so I want to make sure that people don't think that I just casually walk goats. Normally, I wish that I did, but I don't. I was helping do some fundraising for a local foal rescue, and the owner happens to have a goat. I should also mention that, so she gave me the goat to walk around because it kind of knows me, and it was wearing fairy wings.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it was not my choice, but I worked it, and Jojo the goat and I raised some funds.
Jojo? Isn't Jojo the name of that home improvement person?
No.
What's that couple? The slapstick guy from Texas. They live in Waco or something.
Oh, I was thinking Home Improvement with Tim Allen.
not Tim Allen.
Oh, the Joanna Gaines. He calls her Jojo, though.
Okay. Jojo the goat.
She's not a goat. But the goat that I walked was a boy named Jojo.
Cool.
Okay.
All right, well.
You want me to talk more about goats?
Nope. There you go, everybody. There was our pregame. Are you ready to get into it?
How do we segue into Elvira from
Doesn't matter. We just say Elvira.
Okay.
Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, 1988, directed by James Signorelli.
Signorelli.
Yeah. So he directed it. He did a ton of SNL stuff. That's basically all he did. Okay. It was like all SNL.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I still don't know if I had seen this before. There were parts that I thought I had, but then I was like, I don't know. I might have been getting it confused with a different Elvira.
I've never seen it.
This was the first time watch for you.
Until this week.
Cassandra Peterson, Elvira, who plays Elvira. She's obviously the star of it. And she's an interesting character. I don't know if you know much about her. I think I told you a little bit about her.
Tell me again.
She's got a really fascinating story. She did an interview on Postmortem recently with Mick Garris and went over her whole life story. And it was just really bizarre about just the things she got into as a young kid and then ended up getting into like dancing and stripping early on and just like finding her way through life. And then eventually
that explains the nipple tassels.
Oh, for sure. That was experience.
I was like, you don't pick that up. We'll get to it, but you don't pick that up casually.
No, that's a skill set. But then she eventually got into improv comedy and then became friends with all these like classic comedians. And I think, I don't know if they lived together at one point, but they were all like, their little clique was her and Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, and I think Phil Hartman or something. Like, she's just part of this old school kind of improv scene. And she was telling the story how they all kind of broke in at the same time. You know, Phil was getting bigger on the comedy scene. Mm-hmm. Paul Rubens got the Pee Wee gig. She got Elvira, and they were all just like finally making it. And
so,
you know, it was cool.
How did Elvira start out? Was it a TV show? Because I don't actually
know. Yeah, it's just, she's
know.
A host. It's like Joe Bob Briggs. It's
Or Up All Night?
Yeah, it's like that idea where she basically just hosts cheesy movies.
Okay.
And it was a syndicated just TV show. It started real local and then ended up becoming really big.
Okay.
And she just answered a casting call. You know, it was, they just needed a hostess.
Hmm.
And she came in and got the gig. And so, there's more to it than that, but how she got into it. And then, you know, the rest is history. She's had that gig forever, which was a play on Vampirella, like her look and stuff, who, you know, I think that lady tried to sue her or something like that for good reason.
Sue her?
Yeah.
Like, even though she'd answered a call? That's...
Well, no, she created the Elvira look.
Oh.
So you could just come in, like, looking how you want.
However. Yeah. Oh, man. I would have loved to have been at those auditions. You know, there's, like, a man dressed as an octopus, a woman Elvira.
Well, they needed, like, a sexy hostess. And then I think it was one of her friends who had the beehive hairdo idea. And so it was, you
Wait,
know.
Are you calling that a beehive? Because I'm calling that an extend a mullet.
Oh, well, okay. Whatever.
Whatever.
It's very B-52s beehive-ish. So
okay,
no. But so that's Cassandra. She's a funny character. She's quirky, and in her movie, that is definitely like very similar to how she is. I would think in real life. And fun fact, do you know she dated Elvis Presley at one point?
I think everybody did.
I know. I was just thinking how weird. So yeah, this was. If it wasn't a first-time watch, it was a first-time watch
it
for me. Like
it.
I didn't remember any of it at all. Okay, so it starts with the New World Video logo, which is really cool. I enjoy that. And then it opens with this old cheesy sci-fi scene, and then it's the Elvira show. Like, we're brought in to her hosting her own show.
Wait. You're forgetting what we watched prior to the start of the movie.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
So there was an extremely long music video that I think was linked to a movie.
I thought it was linked to this movie, and then it just wasn't.
No, it was a guy with a flat top who had some golden pipes singing under the boardwalk. And there were scenes of, I think, a surf movie because it was characters unrelated. But it went on and on and on. It was like pink, yellow, and green backgrounds with black silhouettes as people, like, you know, head bob sideways, like in profile, making Egyptian, I'm using air quotes, arms. And then, like, a woman crying on a beach. And then, you know, the flat top guy singing under the boardwalk, and then another guy surfing angrily. It went for, it was forever.
It was so long.
It was, we laughed, we were like, ha ha ha. And then at the end, nothing. No explanation as to what it was in regard to. Like, was it a movie? Was it this guy? Who knows?
Dude, no, yeah.
Mystery.
And then we got our movie.
Yes.
That was the warm-up act, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but it's noteworthy. We can't just pass it by.
It's things like that on VHS that you don't get when you do Netflix. You're so like, true. Oh no, you're missing out on the weird crap that these companies would
94
put
minutes of Under the Boardwalk.
Before the actual film. So anyway, yeah, so after that, we do get into the film, though. It opens up on Elvira's show, and she's hosting like an old sci-fi movie. It's like a strange set where she's upset about something, and it's like we're getting led into like behind the scenes. Yeah.
So Elvira's unhappy with her job, and she's ready to move on. And there's like a gig in Vegas.
Oh yeah, she wants the Vegas.
She's like, I'm about done here. I'm ready to go to Vegas. And then this weird cowboy guy who like owns the company or something. It's kind of unclear, but he's somehow in a position of authority. He comes in, and he's like being a absolutely horrible pervert, doing things like saying it's milking time and trying to grab her breasts.
Yes.
And she is having none of it. She's really standing up for herself, which I appreciate considering the time. I think in most movies, women were acting differently, you know, like laughing or just kind of scooting
rolling
away
with it and like pretending.
Yeah, but she like beats him up and quits.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? This came up in the interview that I got the impression of is she clearly doesn't hide her sexuality. She embraces it. She uses it, you know,
to
her advantage. And but what's interesting is she has a clear line of like, it's okay to use sexuality and have fun with it, but you don't cross a boundary. And that came across in her interview. I was like, oh, she's very in control of her image and mm-hmm. what she wants. And it's okay for her to do things, but it's not okay for people to assume that she'll do things. And
yeah.
that came across in this character. And I noted right away, right from that opening scene,
mm-hmm.
it's really cool given the time in the 80s,
yes.
that not only is she taking the stance, but that a woman is the lead in a motion picture comedy,
mm-hmm.
which is not common. I mean, beyond like Whoopi Goldberg, there wasn't a lot of women who were given lead roles without mm-hmm. a man to...
A supporting,
like, yeah,
male
supporting
lead.
Role mm-hmm. lead. Like, it is the Elvira show. Like,
absolutely.
Through and through this whole movie, and... whether you like it or not doesn't matter. It's awesome that she got to kind of call the shots and make her own movie.
It was,
I loved
and it was,
it. I thought
it was
that was
really
awesome.
Progressive for the time. I mean, she's definitely, like you said, owning her sexuality, but it's all about consent. If she's not into it, you're not allowed to cross that boundary. And if you try, she will go Elvira. She'll mistress of darkness you.
Yeah, for sure. But I thought that was interesting to note up front was that we do have this woman, this very strong, funny woman
mm-hmm.
getting a lead role in the 80s.
Yeah, it's
and
rad.
How cool is that? So
she quits.
So she needs $50,000.
Yes.
Because she quit her job, and then she has this daydream?
No, she's... Oh, yeah.
About getting a will. She gets notice that she has some relative.
She gets a letter that her aunt has died, and then she has a daydream about how it's going to play out.
It's like The Price is Right, where they're like, you just got... And then they're like announcing all the things, and then it's not really her. But she basically needs money... Why does she need the money?
Because she's going to start her own show in,
oh, right.
Vegas,
in Vegas,
but it's
okay.
not fully funded, apparently, and she needs $50,000 or the deal's going to fall through. But it is like serendipitous that she gets this notice from a deceased aunt that she didn't know she had, Aunt Morgana, who lives somewhere in like New England.
It's Salem, I think, right? Isn't it like...
No, it's got a different name. It's the town of Falwell.
Oh, okay.
But I don't remember what state
it's in.
Because
it's like a whole throwback to the witch trials kind of thing.
Yeah, so she has to go to the town to collect the inheritance. So
can we talk about her car?
Yes.
Holy
so she
cow.
Decides to drive. Oh, it's in Massachusetts. That's right. She decides to drive there, and she has a black convertible.
It is so amazing. It's got a license plate that says Kick Ass.
Yes.
And it's got spikes. The steering wheel is like a chain steering wheel with a pentagram in it.
Yeah.
It is a leopard print.
The interior. Yeah.
It is the coolest car ever.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes. And she's wearing like all black. She has on a headscarf that's leopard print, which is now in my Amazon shopping list. Yes. I was like, oh, I need to dress like this.
Yeah.
And she also has a belt, which I guess I had never really given Elvira much thought. And her belt is a dagger.
It's like one of those fun prop daggers that has a spring so that when you stab somebody, it goes internally into the handle.
Yes.
She carries that around on her belt.
It's so good.
It's really funny.
So she drives. It's this great montage scene of her making her way to Massachusetts.
Yeah, there's a scene where she stops by a gas station and there's this guy, this gross guy, like picking his nose and spitting loogies. And she gets out. There's like nonstop boob jokes too, by the way, the whole time. It's really funny. Like,
yeah,
the entire film, there are boob jokes. And so he doesn't see her at first, but she gets out, she gasses up, and then drops the gas or something like that, and says something about how those things are going to kill you, and he lights up a cigarette, and then the gas station blows up.
In the rear view.
In the rear view.
Yeah.
You know who that guy was?
No.
Is the floating head on Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Really?
Yeah, the box. Yeah, the genie that opens up. I think that's him.
That makes sense if she was friends with Paul Rubens. Sure. Perhaps this was a mutual friend. So anyway, she ends up in Massachusetts, and the car kind of breaks down as she gets there. You know, it like in the middle of town, the like she pulls into Falwell or wherever she's going, and the hood flies off of her car and it's smoking.
Yeah, I didn't really get why that
happened. I don't know either. Some teenagers come up to help her and are instantly like, woo, because she's so different from this town. And it kind of sets the stage, and we'll just lay it all out here. The town's super duper conservative. We understand that her aunt was eccentric.
Mm-hmm.
And she really sticks out like a sore thumb in the very, very conservative town.
Yeah, I got another little fun fact for you right here, too. The teens that run up.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, the person who was going to be the lead teen, Brad Pitt.
What?
And she decided he was way too handsome and not believable that she wouldn't fall for him if she saw him because he was too attractive.
Well,
and so he didn't get the role.
You know, she should have taken a note from Shania Twain.
Yeah.
Who said wrote that don't impress me much after seeing Brad Pitt and not feeling too impressed.
That's true. So. If only that song had come out. Oh. Who also wore a lot of cheetah print.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I've never seen them in the same place, to be honest.
I don't think they're the same person.
Shenvira?
Yeah. Well, one's Canadian.
Elvira.
So, you know what else is interesting? The cinematographer for this?
Uh-huh.
Very accomplished. You want to know what else they did?
Sure.
American Ninja.
Ugh!
And...
Are we going to talk about American Ninja forever now?
Johnny Dump is. And Masters of the Universe. So there you go.
So when her car blows up, some lady comes up and gives her a piece of her mind. A red-haired lady. She's the busybody from every 80s movie.
Every 80s movie.
I don't know her name. I don't know if you looked it up. It's the red-headed busybody from every 80s movie.
I looked her up, and she's got the little, like, oh, don't you know kind of
voice.
Yeah,
Little Minnesota.
I looked her up, and I was like, there are too many credits to even go through. Yeah. I don't have time for this.
So it's her, and she comes up and gives Elvira a piece of her mind, because Elvira looks different. And Elvira says, listen, sister, if I want your opinion, I'll beat it out of you. She doesn't have any time for this nonsense. She's not even aggressive. She's just like, listen, sister.
And yeah. She's got this kind of Jersey roughness to her, Elvira.
Which is weird because she's coming from California.
Yeah. But she's got that kind of like, listen here. You know, it's funny.
Yeah.
So then we flash forward to like a bar fight scene.
At a bowling alley.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she gets a room at a B&B, Airbnb, nope, not Airbnb, just at a bed and breakfast, and then asks, like, where do I go to have some fun? And she ends up at a bowling alley in this sad town. And there's two, like, real creepy guys who are interested in
her. Oh, yeah. One of those guys is from the new Twin Peaks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. They basically try and force themselves on her, and she uses her fake knife to stab one of them, and it's like, just kidding, but that really enrages them. And then some dude who's like a big buff guy steps in.
Oh, yeah, and punches him out. That's funny.
His name's Bob.
Yeah, Bob.
And she's been checking on him, but he seems to be in a relationship with Pam or Patty, some 80s P name.
Yeah. Well, anyway, yeah, so that's when we're introduced to Bob. And then we flash forward to the will reading. And this is where we find out she's going to get the house and a book that's like a recipe book.
Yep, and a dog.
But her uncle or great uncle or whatever, the woman's brother is at
Morgana's
the will reading.
Brother.
And he wants stuff too, but he gets cut out of everything.
He gets some money.
No, he gets nothing. Remember the butler and the driver or something like that. The maid and the driver get the money and he gets nothing. But then right after, he offers her $50 for the recipe book, which she's like, yeah, I don't need a recipe book. You can have it.
Mm-hmm.
But we quickly learn that Uncle Vincent is up to no good. And he's kind of an evil dude. He was in The Elephant Man and Wild at Heart and Helsing.
Okay. And so Elvira has inherited her aunt's house. And so she goes to go check it out. And she goes with the lawyer or whatever, the estate officer. And then
estate officer.
I don't know. What do you call a person who does that?
Executor.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Whatever.
All right.
Don't. You look too smug.
So. No. It was more of a question than a statement.
Oh, whatever. So she goes to the house. It's pretty beat up, but it's like an enormous mansion-y house. And then there's a dog. It's like a fluffy poodle. And Elvira immediately like drops everything and apparently has a dog grooming and dye tool set and gives this poodle a makeover.
Oh, an extreme punk makeover. It's like a mohawk, like a pink or purple mohawk.
Well, one ear is shaved, one ear is not.
Spike belt. It's awesome.
It's something.
So now she's got this punk poodle companion.
Yes, and the dog also hides the recipe book from her.
Right.
She settles in, and then that night, as she's getting ready for bed, the teens are creeping around the house, spying on her, and then she just kind of busts them, but, like, they're watching her be all sexy, and then she opens the window, and she's got a green face mask on, and they're like, ah! And she's like, next time, just come to the front door, or something like that.
Yeah, I did like the mixture of sex and comedy in this film is very 80s.
Yeah, because they push it very far forward, and then wheel it way back. It's super 80s in style.
But it was interesting thinking the whole time that it was led by a woman writing the humor. You know,
is she a writer?
I don't know if she's a writer, but I'd have to imagine she had a pretty heavy hand in it. I mean, she's a comedian, so. But it was kind of fun watching that take on it versus, you know, some of the other classic 80s movies that would have a different angle.
Yeah, and then the next day, she entices all the teens to her house, and they make over her house. Like, how, Eric, do we get a bunch of teens to make over our house?
You have to dress like Elvira.
I will dress like Elvira if they will bring supplies and make over our house.
I think questionable ethically. And
I mean, but when we're talking about your real estate, you gotta dress like Elvira sometimes.
Okay. As long as they're 18, I guess.
She doesn't do anything. She just entices them into house makeovers.
Yeah. So I noticed this is kind of like The Money Pit. Remember that movie?
Oh, I love that movie.
Do you? I'm wondering if this is one of those movies where it's like, I love that movie, and then we watch it later and we're like, oh, this is a dud.
I have watched The Money Pit probably more times than is necessary. I've probably watched it 15 times.
Does that have Tom Hanks in it?
Yes!
You're a really big Tom Hanks fan.
I have seen all of the Tom Hanks.
Oh, speaking of which, today I found, upgraded from our kind of mediocre copy, but I found an original copy of Joe versus the Volcano for you.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, the cover is way cooler.
Okay, so yes, the teens hang, make over the house, and then
it looks like a Pee Wee set after that,
it's
right?
It's so great. Yeah, it's like three different colors. Yeah. It's great. And then the city council is like, wait, too many teenagers in one place, and they decide any teen hanging out with Elvira will be expelled from school.
Yeah, and the city council consists of several people, but one is the busybody lady that we met earlier. Mm-hmm. The other is the dude from Wayne's World.
Yeah. He's also in, like, everything.
Yeah, but I always think of him from Wayne's World.
Early 90s.
Yeah. So they're on the city council.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a brief scene, though, back at her house where there's the dog steps out from the top of the stairs and the silhouette is like a Rottweiler.
Yes.
And then it just runs down and it's the punk poodle.
Yes.
It's pretty funny. So I guess we're getting the impression that maybe it's a shapeshifter.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
And Elvira's house makeover was with the intent to sell the house to make cash for this Vegas show.
Right.
So she puts her house for sale, but nobody comes to the showing because the city council is having none of this, which is weird because it seems if they would want Elvira to go, maybe they would encourage people to buy that house, whatever. So she starts to panic and then inexplicably decides to wander around downtown and try and get a job.
Yeah, well, what's interesting... Okay, so there's one big thing that we glossed over that's crucial to the plot.
What?
We learn that her uncle Vincent is like a warlock.
Oh, yeah.
Basically.
I don't think I even made note of that. Yeah, till the end.
And the recipe book is actually a spell book.
Yes.
And so...
Like a witch's spell book.
Yeah, and that's why he wants it so bad. That's really the whole premise of this movie is he's after that book.
That's funny.
She tries to show a movie. Like, she's going to get together one of her screenings, like what she does for her show.
Yeah, she runs into Bob, who owns a movie theater, and she's like, this is how I'm gonna make some money, and he lets her set up an Elvira show.
Yeah, and then she goes over to the high schoolers that are all out at like a restaurant or something like that, and she tries to guilt them into being like, look, I'm gonna have a screening of a movie. You guys have to come and invite all your friends. And they're like, we can't. City council said we can't be seen with you. And then she throws this, like, over the top, I'm done for if you guys don't come. Mm-hmm. And then she just says, her quote is, tell him I was more than a great set of boobs.
Oh, goodness. That's a lot of confidence.
Yeah. And then the teens break out to go to the theater because they're like, no, we're going to go support her.
Mm-hmm.
And they all go to the theater where she does a showing. I don't remember what she was showing. Do you?
It was just some
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, maybe.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'd have to think.
But the point was at the end, she does a little routine and gold flakes are supposed to sprinkle on her from the ceiling, like Flashdance style.
Oh, I forgot about the Flashdance reference. But then when she pulls it, it's like tar.
Tar and then feathers
and
are
then
sprinkled
feather.
By the owner or the bartender at the bowling alley, Pam or Patty, whatever her name is. And then Bob comes over to her house and she finds the recipe book, which is the spell book. She cleans up from the tar and feathering and she decides this is a great time to cook dinner. To seduce Bob, I guess. So she uses the recipe book and thinks she's making a casserole, but instead she makes a monster of some sort.
Well, she's got a really great quote when she's making it. She says, doesn't smell too bad, but it looks like cock-a-doo-doo.
Classy.
I forgot about that 80s term.
Cock-a-doo-doo. It was an 80s term.
Yeah, and it turns into a creature. She serves dinner, and it's like this creature comes out of the plate. It's
like a
cool
lizard monster, yeah. And then they put it in the garbage disposal.
Yeah.
Which is really neat.
Kind of reminds me of on House 2 when they lift up the dinner plate and Slim comes out, you know, like rises out of the plate. That was
or like
cool.
The shrimp hands in Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of them there.
So then the dog leads Elvira to a trunk with bones and a shrunken head and a letter addressed to Elvira. And it basically tells her the dog is her familiar. The uncle is not supposed to have the book. It basically outlines the plot of the movie. Tells her that she comes from a long line of witches, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
She tries and fails to use this information to make money because she's like, well, great, I'm a witch. I need $50,000.
Well, and then she tries to cast a spell and she then, like, it's in the dark, the lights go out and she thinks Bob's making a pass at her and she's holding like Bob's junk or something. And she's like, oh, Bob. And then the lights come on and she's holding a snake that she had summoned and throws that. It's a lot
and
of slapstick witch humor.
Then she hooks up with Bob anyway.
Yeah. So she makes a casserole with a spell and everybody eats it the next day.
They're at a morality festival.
Is that what that is?
Yes. So
that makes it
the
even
city
funnier.
Council's having a morality festival, and she sneaks in a casserole that she made from the spell book. everyone chows down on this casserole, all of the, you know, morally upright citizens, and then they get super frisky.
They all start stripping. You know what it reminded me of? Do you remember that, I think it's a late 90s movie, it was a British comedy where the main lady sells pot or whatever, and they all get high at that party, and there's like the British cop is just in his helmet with his bobby stick running around.
Saving Grace.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh.
You just pulled that one out.
Came up with it out of my head. And, didn't Wikipedia.
But you remember, there's the whole scene where everybody gets high because
yes.
It's like something like it lights on fire or something, and everybody smokes out. It's kind of like this, but everybody's horny and like humping and stuff.
Yes.
But not like really humping, but just like making out.
Yes.
And yeah, at one point, it's funny because there's this table scene and this guy holds up a hot dog and says, "Remind you of anything?" And then the woman holds up a taco shell.
Ham or patty.
And says, "Remind you of anything?" And then they put the hot dog in the taco shell and she eats it.
Yes. And then...
That was funny.
The whole thing concludes with Elvira punching the shirt off of Pam or Patty.
Oh, yeah. She punches her so hard her shirt falls off.
And then revealing that she's wearing like a padded bra.
That was funny.
And then...
they arrest Elvira on witchcraft.
I guess. Yep. And her dog.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sure.
I hope if I ever go to prison, I get to bring a dog.
Yeah. And the teens decide they're going to break her out of jail. And it's pretty funny because they do a good job of like breaking through the roof, but they end up landing in the cell next to her.
Oh, I know.
And the cops are like, "Well, isn't that convenient?"
Valiant effort.
Yeah. And then that whole time, the townsfolk have decided that they can go back to an old-fashioned law where, because the brother brings this up, the Uncle Vincent, mm-hmm. is like, you know, there's still a law on the books that says if you practice witchcraft, you can be, like, burned at the stake or whatever.
And they're on board. They're like,
they are totally on board.
Yes.
So there's, like, this mob getting ready the stake, and they're going to burn Elvira old-fashioned witch style.
And meanwhile, she sends Bob to go get the book of spells, but the uncle intervenes and gets the book. So the dog, her familiar, turns himself into a teeny tiny punk mouse.
Oh, that was so cool. It was like a little mouse with a dyed mohawk.
And then the mouse dog escapes. The mouse punk turns into a Rottweiler and helps Bob escape from the uncle. And then, meanwhile, Elvira is led to burn at the stake. Like, they've got a full situation. Crowd is shouting, "Burn the witch" at her.
Yeah, but the uncle at this point has gotten the book from Bob and has gone full on warlock. Like, he's turning into this kind of like demon warlock at this point.
Yes. And then Bob tells Pam or Patty, she isn't very nice because Pam or Patty, whatever her name is up there like ready to start the first fire.
Oh, yeah.
And is like giving advice and tips on how to
You need to light it in multiple areas for it to be the most, you know, productive.
And then Elvira remembers at this point that she has a magic ring and uses it to start some rain and put out the fire, and everyone kind of scatters. They're like, rain's too much.
Then there's this like Star Wars laser battle with her ring and her uncle.
He goes after her when the when the whole burning at the stake falls through, and Bob and the dog try and fail to intervene. So Elvira then accidentally flings her ring onto his finger.
Yeah, it is funny. Although the ring laser like lightsaber battle reminded me of Spaceballs.
Yeah, for sure.
It was really funny.
For sure. And so he chases her into a cemetery, and then she throws her shoe into his skull. Like her heel straight through his noggin.
Yeah, and at this point, this is when the town sees that he was the bad person. He was this, like, warlock. And they rally around her. And all of a sudden, she's now in the good grace of the town and is accepted. And all is well.
Like, well,
Because she defeated him.
She hasn't defeated him yet, because she goes to her house. The weirdo from, like, the weird perv from the bowling alley at the beginning attacks her in her house, and she wards him off with leeches?
Yeah.
Do you remember that scene?
Yeah, she throws leeches on his just face. Just, like, creates leeches on his face.
Sexual predators, just so you know, leeches in the face. That's plenty. Because he, like, fell out a window. And then the uncle attacked her, shoots flames from his mouth at her. She gets her ring back, has to leave a book in a burning house, and that's the end of it. And insurance, we find out, does not cover demons. But the townspeople then apologize to her. She inherits her uncle's estate since he died in this fire. And that's when she inherited enough money to get her own Vegas show.
Yeah, and the film concludes with her making it to Vegas, doing a rap.
Yep, first like a song, then a rap.
Like a Teen Witch style rap, which is second week in a row that we've had this happen.
Are we leading up to Teen Witch?
I think we are absolutely leading up to Teen Witch.
I hope so.
So she does a little rap, and then she does this very elaborate nipple tassel boob dance.
It's amazingly skilled.
And she seems like it's no big deal. Like, she could read a book while
she's
doing this.
One, I'm trying to do it right now. I'm moving one shoulder and then the other.
Yeah, well, keep
working. It wouldn't do it.
Yeah, it's, she clearly has done this for a living. Yeah, and that's how it ends.
With two kneeling buff guys.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool. And that's the film. It concludes. It was pretty entertaining. What did you think of it?
It was good. We had to do it over two nights because I started to fall asleep, but I didn't fall asleep is the key note. Yeah. I was awake.
So I enjoyed it. I thought, I like Elvira. I think the character's really sassy and fun, and I loved the idea of her getting to have her own show and kind of guiding that ship. I think it was much needed in a time, maybe a little ahead of its time, honestly, but it was funny. She definitely had the 80s camp still. Like, yeah. She wasn't trying to push anything. She was just being herself, but it's kind of a classic, you know, how could you not watch an Elvira movie at some point?
Yeah, I think it was good because I've always kind of assumed I knew who Elvira was. And then when we started watching it, I was like, I don't think I've ever actually watched anything with her because I was, I think, a little too young to see her on TV. And it just kind of escaped me, I think. I just missed that window. So it was fun to get a little background, I guess, on a character that I knew.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a fun movie. So, well, there you go. There's Elvira, Mistress of the Dark from 1988. I'd recommend it. I mean, I guess if you're into 80s comedy horror.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad at all. I definitely,
I mean, it was bad, but intentionally so.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was campy.
Yes.
I mean, and you would expect it from, like, a director of SNL, too. It's got that vibe to it, but.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, no, it was fun. Well, if you like this episode, or you know somebody that you think will like this episode, tell them about it. You can rate and review and subscribe. We're on iTunes and Podbean and Spotify. You can follow us.
At Laser Graves. I'm also at Mariah Rose Wimmer.
Yeah, that's on Instagram.
Yep.
And I'm over at Death at 33 RPM. And yeah, let people know. And hopefully it'll be as entertaining next week because
Teen Witch, Teen Witch, Teen Witch.
We'll come back next week with another one. So see you then.
Bye. Bye.